Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
So Josh, if I go to adamandeve.com, which has all kinds of adult products, some that I may enjoy for various and sundry reasons and purposes.
Or you could, your wife could enjoy various products for various purposes.
Well, if she enjoys them, I assure you I will enjoy them. And hold the mic a little bit closer. You're a little quiet there.
Really?
Yeah, okay. There you go. That's actually better.
It's touching my mustache, and it feels creepy if I do that, so no.
Let the microphone touch your mustache, Josh.
No, I only let things from adamandeve.com touch my mustache. Yes, I segged into that.
Well done. Okay, so adamandeve.com, I get the product that I'm interested in. What can I do to save some money?
You enter, there's a little box that says promo code. You enter the code STATIC, and you get 50% off of a single item. You get 3 free DVDs. You get free shipping on your order, and you get a free mystery gift. All for entering the code STATIC. Are you still playing with my knobs?
I'm still playing with knobs. It's okay. I'm getting you fixed. You're going to sound good.
For once?
For once.
Okay, so enter the code STATIC at adamandeve.com, and you get all that free shit. Well, free cheap shit and free shit and free shipping and free mystery gift and all that.
And you help us out at the same time.
Yay, commissions.
Yay. So today, we're going to talk about stuff that has happened in our lives.
And now this is not the same episode we had 2 weeks ago, although it's kind of thematically the same. Because, see, what happened is Scott just had a birthday.
Yes, I did. On the 10th.
And then in 2 days, I'm going to have a birthday. And Scott and I are the same year age, so.
Yeah, there's, what, 10 days apart on our birthdays. And
yep, you got 10 days on me.
Yeah, I know.
So
I am old.
So it was making us think of our life and all the things that we've seen, we've witnessed, etc. And what it comes down to is this is the way it was in my head. There's all these things that you and I experienced growing up, Scott, that our kids are only going to be able to read about in books. The same way as we grew up, we can only read about the atomic scare, duck and cover, Bay of Pigs, JFK assassination, things of that nature.
Exactly, stuff that our parents lived through. For instance, talking to my dad, I mentioned this on a show a while ago, but I said that we always enjoyed watching A Christmas Story because that captured his time of youth, that he was born right at the beginning of World War II. He remembers the end of it. And again, this is stuff that you and I can only read about. We can't really experience.
Right. Like, you know, I had a listener email me, a Radiodrome listener, that said one of the reasons he loves Radiodrome is he never had a VCR. That basically they had DVDs his entire life.
Wow.
He's only like 13 years old. And that just baffled me that somebody that never, you know, that would listen that never owned a VCR before.
Well, let alone VCRs. You know, you and I know when I started first doing video editing when I was in college, and of course the college had older equipment because it's a college and they didn't spend a lot. But I remember editing on 1-inch reel-to-reel tape.
Yep.
And stuff like that. And again, these are things that people that are younger than us are never going to experience. And it got you and I both thinking about stuff that you and I have experienced really on a huge scale that are going to make the history books. That my little nephew Tony, who's 5 right now,
you're going to be able to say, I was there, or I remember when that happened. You really want to pause this to open your soda, don't you?
No, it's okay.
Just open your damn soda.
Okay, I'll open the soda.
He's trying to be all quiet to not disturb this, and it's really bugging the shit out of me right now.
I don't know if you've ever, well, of course you've opened a soda can, but you just, it's one of those things you can't do quietly.
Because I keep seeing him going near the pause button, and it's like, just do it already.
So the first thing that came to mind was one thing that I personally witnessed. I happened to be there due to hot air ballooning and my travels and stuff like that. That's going to be, by the way, I've gotten a couple of emails from listeners. One of these shows coming up, I will talk about my travels because I've been everywhere.
Have you been to Antarctica?
Not yet.
Then have not been everywhere. You lying sack of shit.
With the exception of anywhere in Africa, Alaska, or Antarctica, I have been just about everywhere else.
Well, Alaska is still part of the U.S., so.
Well, yeah, but I want to actually be one of those people that sets foot on all 50 states, so I plan to make it up there eventually, and that's my 50th state. So, one of the things that I remember is, back in 1989, we did the World Hot Air Ballooning Championship in Saga, Japan.
Okay.
And after that, we came home to the U.S. for literally 2 days. And 2 days later, I didn't even unpack, but we took all our stuff and went off to Europe. And my mother and sister and I did a European tour, everywhere from Ireland to the rest of the UK to Italy and Spain and Greece.
To the audience right now, am I the only one picturing the Griswolds and European vacation right now?
It wasn't quite that bad. One of the things that my family prides ourselves on is that we're always travelers. We're never tourists.
Okay.
There's a big difference.
No, I can see the difference there. I can see what you're talking about.
Exactly. But I happened to be in West Berlin on November 9th. Actually, not November 9th. It was a couple of days later, but crap was still going down, and we amazingly ended up taking a bus into East Berlin, but of course by then, this had happened.
Good evening, everyone. From the west side of the Berlin Wall at the Brandenburg Gate, I'm Tom Brokaw. The Brandenburg Gate, of course, is in East Berlin, and the sound that you hear and what you're seeing tonight, not hammers and sickles, but hammers and chisels as young people take down this wall bit by bit. Earlier,
the Great Fall of the Berlin Wall.
Which I watched on TV because I've never been out of America.
Which is a shame. But yeah, and I remember being there, and I remember my sister and I, we still have pretty good sized chunks of the wall, because on these days following the fall, you could just walk up and literally knock out a chunk. Now they've posterity. Yeah, now they've got guards up and you can't quite do that and all of that. And there's a very large portion of the wall, of course, that just isn't there anymore.
It's the stuff you see on the news footage being torn down and falling over and being hammered away and all that shit.
Exactly. And of course there was David Hasselhoff's famous concert was there with his leather jacket that lit up and yeah. But
how does something historical turn into David Hasselhoff? You know, I don't get that.
Well, you got to remember, it was Germany at the time. He was a huge musical artist, and it was a big deal for him to be able to put on a concert at this wall and have the East Berliners, those in what was the communist bloc of the country, hear this great Western music, and to travel freely between the two sides, between the DDR and West Germany, was unheard of. It was amazing. And these are, you know, I remember hearing stories of a family, especially since I was involved in hot air ballooning. One of the hot air ballooning related stories that's always circulated is a family actually made their own hot air balloon to get over this wall from east into west. And if you ever make it there to the Checkpoint Charlie Museum and stuff like that, this was, since World War II, people dying in order to travel from one side of what is really an arbitrary wall to the other.
Oh, it that's always just stifled me. That if you ever look at a map, you've got, you know, Germany, all free, 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 and then this one little tiny dot in the middle, communist.
Yeah.
You know, that's always just... Guys, why don't the free places just go in and take this fucking area, you know?
And they kind of did in a very non-violent way. But, you know, I remember there was one of the... We found a taxi driver, and if you're ever traveling, find a taxi driver. gave him a little bit of cash and just said, take us over into East Berlin, show us around, bring us back. And the taxi, he was beside himself. I remember.
Here's a fin, go.
Well, we gave him the fare, and when we finished the trip, you know, he was talking. Part of his family got stuck over in East Berlin at the end of World War II. This guy had to be 70.
Okay.
But part of his family got separated, and as he's driving around East Berlin with us, he's explaining, you know, I've never seen this before, but this is apparently blah, and then we've been here, and it really is amazing the stark difference still today between West Berlin, which is a modernized Western city. It's a European city. And I would even say above average, because it really has flourished economically. It's one of the few European countries that until recently really flourished economically. And then you cross that wall, or where the wall was at this point, and it's like walking into the ruins of World War II.
It's literally crossing the, you know, the other, how they always say, the bad part of town's on the other side of the tracks.
Right, but it's not necessarily a bad part of town. It's a part of town that was stunted, that time stopped. In 1950s, there, you know, of course, going through there was still a lot of the communist cars that many Westerners hadn't seen. There were still buildings that were bombed in World War II that
had never been rebuilt,
were just big piles of junk. And it's slowly catching up, but there is still a very distinct line of demarcation.
Do you know what, to me, on a smart-ass kind of level, the worst thing about the fall of communism was? You guys destroyed an entire genre of movie villain by destroying communism. That was an entire genre of movie villain that you destroyed, you sons of bitches.
Well, it certainly put a hurt on James Bond. But the, you know, luckily the Middle Easterners were willing to step in.
Well, the other go-to always is neo-Nazis.
Exactly. And they're still around. But I remember this fall, and I remember at the end of our taxi ride with this gentleman, him just crying, and we offered a pretty sizable tip, basically doubled his fare, and he said, no, it was an honor just to show
to
you.
To do this.
Yes, it was an honor to do this, and it was an honor to drive through a part of town that I will eventually be very proud of. And it's a very slow rebuild. That's why I always laugh when people talk about Hurricane Katrina, which was another thing that we'll eventually get to.
Well, that's something that the youth they lived through.
Yeah, but
so
I always hear people going, well, why isn't all of Louisiana built back up and running again after Hurricane Katrina? I'm like,
because it's not like The Sims,
yeah.
or Civilization, where you, yeah, can just hit a button and do that.
Because East Berlin has had a whole lot longer than the victims of Katrina, and there are parts of it that still aren't built up yet. So,
well, the whole thing with the wall falling to me was that was we might not have known it at the time, but we saw the world. Change.
Exactly. Oh, by the way,
although at the time we just couldn't see it.
Right. I do want to apologize real quick. I am dealing with a bit of a head cold, so if you hear me snorting in the background, I apologize.
We totally could have played that off as the mirror with cocaine. Come on.
Yeah, well, not going to happen. But the world literally changed overnight. And I even remember Ronald Reagan's famous speech to Gorbachev of
tear down this wall.
And a little bit later he did.
I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Another big one I remember that, again, is something that only in the history books is play the audio, and then let's see if they can figure it out before we actually talk about it.
Sure.
7, 6. We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1. And liftoff. Liftoff of the 25th Space Shuttle mission, and it has cleared the tower.
Roger, roll, Challenger. Good roll program confirmed. Challenger now heading downrange. Engine's beginning throttling down now at 94%. Normal throttles for most of the flight, 104%. We'll throttle down to 65% shortly. 2,257 feet per second. Altitude 4.3 nautical miles. Downrange distance 3 nautical miles. Engines throttling up. Three engines now at 104%.
Challenger, go with throttle up.
Challenger, go with throttle up.
Minute 15 seconds. Velocity 2,900 feet per second. Altitude 9 nautical miles. Downrange distance 7 nautical miles.
And that, what you just heard, was the Challenger exploding.
Sorry, it still brings a tear to my eye.
You know what one of the creepiest moments is? That last bit. Do you notice that the controller was still giving altitude readings? He clearly had not seen that it while it was still ascending, wasn't in one piece any longer?
Let me explain something. The PIO, or Public Information Officer, at MOCR, Mission Operations Control Room, All you see in MOCR at the PIO station is telemetry feedback, which obviously obviously at the moment of explosion went dead, but you still go on as if
you still
know,
do your job. It's,
yeah, you still do your job. And he didn't see the video. And so when his telemetry went dead and when he noticed that the rest of MOCR
reacted. Do you have a sneeze building?
I went to space camp prior to the Challenger disaster and after the Challenger disaster. I am a huge space geek. It was always from my wee little young days a goal of mine to be an astronaut. Physics, especially big physics and universal physics, has always been kind of a back burner passion of mine, and space travel has always been a passion of mine. And you wouldn't believe how shitty this decade has been and how crappy my outlook for space travel and my hopes for the U.S. space program, which of course were just dashed by Obama.
Well, what was that last shuttle disaster? The one like 3-4 years? No, it was even more than that. Early 2000s.
Yeah,
was that Atlantis?
I believe so, but it was it broke up on reentry.
Right. You know what a creepy connection to me is? One of the astronauts was my dad's third cousin, so I actually had a relative that died on that one. It's somebody I never knew, but I found this out after the fact that it was like a third cousin to my dad. That's just kind of creepy.
My dad was working in Louisiana, living and working in Louisiana at the time of that disaster, and he got a piece of the space shuttle that he later turned into the Wright people. But basically, one of the vets he was working on was runs a farm down there and had a piece of land, and he brought it into Dad, and Dad bought it off of him and then eventually turned it back into NASA.
But see,
because that's the right thing to do. But I actually at one point had in my hands a piece of that shuttle.
Well, and then the biggest thing about the Challenger, well, I should say the two biggest things, were the fact that there was a civilian on board. The very first time a civilian was ever allowed on a space shuttle mission is the time it blows up.
Krista McCullough.
Right. So that's kind of a fucking finger in the eye right there.
Right.
But then the fact that the entire thing was utterly preventable. I'm saying this to the audience.
Yes.
Do you guys know why the shuttle blew up? Because of TV coverage. Because they knew it was going to be too cold for the O-rings to operate properly, But if they scrubbed the launch, they would lose millions of dollars of endorsements from the TV coverage that was scheduled if they moved it. So they said, go forward anyway. We need to get this on TV. Yeah. So because of NASA internal politics and saying, we want to be live on TV, those seven people died.
Yeah, and there were of course plenty of engineers, and if you ever catch a documentary on the disaster,
they made a TV movie about it too. That was not apologetic at all. That told the truth.
There were plenty of engineers who said, "Don't do this." But this disaster, I remember, I was in school at the time. No, I wasn't. But we were watching the launch on TV. I don't think I was in school.
I remember watching it, because that's the other thing. People got to realize, because Christy McAuliffe was a teacher,
yeah,
every school in America was watching this live.
Yes, and I remember watching this and this happening live, and I cried then. I still cry a little bit now. I'm sorry. But the Challenger disaster was, of course, a huge... It was a blow to me. It was a blow to geeks everywhere. And it's something that we're still talking about, and it's luckily it's serving a purpose as a cautionary tale.
You would think that, but I'm not trying to be flippant. Watch the Penn and Teller bullshit episode on NASA, and you'll see how they learned nothing from this. NASA internal politics actually got worse when it came to this sort of thing and the danger that they put people in. You would think on a theoretical level that they did learn from this. All they learned is, okay, don't make that particular mistake again. So I'm not trying to be flippant, but watch the bullshit episode on NASA.
But somebody learned something, at least. But yeah, we've seen that. We saw later, of course, we had the shuttle breakup on reentry, which I remember seeing that as well. And now, like I said, with Obama, we've seen all but kind of the death of our space program.
It would have, you know, I don't blame that on Obama, because McCain would have done the same thing. So, you know, as far as I'm, no matter who it was, would have done it. It just happened to be Obama. I'm not an Obama apologist, but that I don't blame him for
that. I don't know, because McCain was kind of on board with George Bush. And that's the one thing that I will give George W. Bush credit for, was he was the one that said, we will go to Mars. We didn't, but
he probably thought the moon was Mars.
He really wanted another space race, and he wanted the U.S. to remain in the top spot of that. And now the Europeans have kind of taken over, and eventually,
the Chinese too.
I was going to say, eventually, I think China is the one that's going to win out overall. But yeah, it hit me then. It still hits me today. And that one disaster really was the beginning of the fall of our space program, which, again, you know, what's amazing is people our parents' age, of course, lived through the beginning of the space program too.
And we kind of lived through
the end of it. But within one person's lifetime to see us, you know, we will go to the moon by the end of this decade and do the other things, to no more funding.
As long as that's they don't send us to that horrible planet of the apes. Wait a minute. Statue of Liberty? That was our planet. Yes. You blew it up. Sorry, I had to go Homer Simpson on that.
That's no problem. But even more so, there was on another side, because I'm going to let's lighten things up. On the pop culture side, there was something that you and I lived through that certainly hit me in my household.
And it's something that is now in the form that we're about to talk about, non-existent.
Yeah, I mean, we lived through the entire thing.
We've actually done a whole episode on it in the past, but still.
A few seconds away from switching to the redundant sense sequencer.
And no, this is not the Challenger again. T-minus
27 seconds. We have gone for redundant sense sequencer start. T-minus 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15, 14, 13, T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. We've gone for main engine start. We have main engine start.
Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll.
And that, of course, was the birth of MTV.
1981.
Yep.
August 1st, 1981. And we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this since we did a whole episode on MTV. But the impact of what MTV was and how what a revolutionary idea it was at the time that we'd seen nothing like that before.
And not just impact on television and cable and MTV
pop culture.
MTV really became a reason to get cable. I think MTV is one of the channels responsible for the absolute blow up of cable in general, but
I think it was the blow up of music in general too.
But you know, the MTV ushered in that whole new wave movement. MTV gave a lot of artists, and again, we talked about this, but because of cheap, basically being able to buy their or get their music videos cheap, elevated a lot of artists to status that they may not have achieved otherwise.
Well, and then also there's the fact that it influenced not just an entire generation, but everything in pop culture. Look at how terms like MTV-style fashion, MTV-style editing, that movies, oh, this is a very MTV-style movie. I mean, just look at how the words MTV-style entered our culture to describe things that really it had nothing to do with.
Exactly. And it really did usher in a whole new style and everything that we saw, and now it's gone.
And now MTV is about a bunch of teen sluts that have cameras follow them around.
Exactly. Teen and 20 sluts. But moving on from MTV, later on, of course, MTV has started to fall. You and I have graduated high school by this point, and out in California, there was another... It was one of those where you knew that something big was changing.
And not in a good way.
There's only one subject.
All right, so now you're saying there's only one person in that Ford Bronco.
That's interesting. It's the first time we've heard that was a 911 call. So the contact was made directly from the Ford Bronco here to emergency services, right?
I'm sorry. I'm trying to listen to three other radios. Say that again.
I said, this is the first we've heard. There's been a 911 call from this vehicle?
Yes.
Can you tell us what the radios are saying? Is it anything pertaining to this particular situation?
No, but if I put you on hold, I could probably get some more info.
Why don't you go ahead, and we'll get back to you as soon as you're ready, all right, Pete? Okay.
And that, of course, was the very beginning of that low-speed chase of a white Bronco through Southern California streets.
And it unfortunately... The ensuing trial of O.J. Simpson is what I think both strengthened and absolutely weakened what we call the news. Because, I'm sorry, that was not news to the level that the news would lead us to believe it was the O.J. trial.
Exactly.
I mean, there were O.J. trial trading cards, O.J. trial comic books and coloring books, and there's no reason a violent, misogynistic thug murdering his wife and her friend should have made him a pop culture hero. That should have never happened.
Well, in my opinion, never. The not guilty verdict also should never have happened, but... It at least changed both. It changed television news because it drug CNN kind of out of the rut that they were in.
But at least they were in a moralistic rut where they were still a news station.
True.
Then.
But it brought their ratings way up, and unfortunately changed. That was the moment that television news changed. It changed the justice system because it made it was the first major case to make DNA evidence viable.
It made a trial a spectacle. It made it like everything, you know, people had to tune in every day to see what happened on OJ this week. It was like a soap opera. Oh my God, they pulled that plot twist out on OJ today. It was like something out of a soap opera writer's wet dream.
Yes, and we had, of course, the infamous Johnny Cochran, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. and he really played it up for the cameras. But and we've seen that impact of that trial even on a local scale. We had a gentleman named Stephen Avery who
here in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah, here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who killed a reporter
that was photographer
on his land. And the trial of Stephen Avery was Green Bay's version of
single day. When Scott and I were working at Channel 26, every day, the entire first 7 to 10 minutes were what happened in the Stephen Avery trial. You had guests come in and analyze.
Well,
the district attorney said this, so this could mean this. And yes, it became a spectacle.
I even remember one famous cut-in at 26 that happened during a Packers football game. And it went like this. They were going for a field goal, and the kick is up. And the kick is cut in.
I remember the fall. See, I don't remember that. I wasn't working that day. But
I was working that night.
I worked the next day
when
the fallout came from that.
So we had moments like that. And really, it was the OJ trial that put the court system, you know, and kind of proved that the court system means ratings. And it, unfortunately, it was also when news organizations went, wait, this gets us ratings, but it's not really, you know, it's not that big a deal, but it gets us ratings. Get it front and center. Let's go tabloid.
And see, that, I think, I don't know the actual date that this channel emerged, but I think that is the bullshit that's responsible for something like Court TV.
Oh, yeah.
You got to remember, in the early days, I mean, obviously Court TV has morphed into something totally unrecognizable, but in the early days, Court TV was live coverage of big name headline trials.
And that's all it was at the beginning.
Yeah. And then occasionally you'd have like a Forensic Files type show like that. But yeah, during the day from like 5 a.m. to 7 p.m., it was live coverage of trials.
Yep.
And in a way, I mean, it doesn't feel good to be that weird spectator that, oh, this murder trial is better than any TV show. I actually heard one commentator say, what you're watching now is better than anything you'll ever see in a scripted drama.
Yeah, and
that's just sick to me.
That hurts. I mean, unfortunately, it was also the time when I think people watching the OJ trial, they lost the fact that two people died a horrible and painful death.
And the fact that it was clear who did it, and the fact that they were overlooking it because he was charismatic and had a shit ton of money.
And to tell you the truth, I think if that trial were to happen today, where your average Joe, your average jury member has a better understanding of DNA evidence, I think the outcome would have been different.
Well, I think the one thing, honestly, that led to his acquittal was the Mark Furman racism stuff.
Yeah.
I really think if OJ was white and all the other facts were the same, I think he would have been found guilty no matter what, which is odd saying since, you know, our court system likes to convict black people over white people. So
but
I get the,
guess what?
I get the irony of what I just said.
It's amazing how much a good charismatic defense and the right amount of money and fame can overcome racism. But there was another event a little bit earlier than the OJ one, about 14 years, if I remember right, that my family first heard about on a football game. And I can tell you that I remember, my sister's older than I am, and I remember her weeping when this happened. And I mean, she was a teenager at the time, so it was shut in a room,
right,
crying, absolutely going nuts. And for her generation, which is kind of between ours and my parents, it was a landmark moment. But you and I were alive.
And the voice you're going to hear is Howard Cosell, the famous sports announcer.
Yes.
This was on Monday Night Football, I believe?
Yes.
Smith is on the line, and I don't care what's on the line, Howard. You have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
And Howard Cosell, of course, a world famous sports announcer, right up there with Harry Carey, who called the Cubs games, and some European examples that I can't think of. But, you know, right up there, announcing this during Monday Night Football.
And it kind of makes the game meaningless after that. You know who wins, who loses, who gives a shit.
The death of John Lennon. And I know you're not a Beatles fan, and that's okay. But you can't deny that the Beatles and John Lennon, especially along with Yoko, really changed.
I will never give Yoko any credit for anything.
But they really did kind of they ushered in 1968. We saw the switch in the Beatles. We saw that they were during that they led the British invasion with music, and they've been influential throughout the decades. So to hear. First off, to hear that the Beatles broke up absolutely devastated some people, but there was always hope that they'd get back together. And then to hear John Lennon being shot, huge impact.
Well, and then, see, here this ties back into what we were saying prior. Let's say Mark David Chapman shot John Lennon in the 1990s. Mark David Chapman's trial would have been a spectacle.
Oh, yeah.
But, it was reported on and things like
that. Yes, it was reported on. It was covered, but it wasn't.
It wasn't the story. Yeah,
right.
I mean, nowadays, let's just say for the sake of argument, that happened in 1995, okay?
Okay.
What would have happened would have been he would have been elevated to a star. His trial would have actually overshadowed John Lennon's funeral, his contributions to music, his remembrances.
Right.
The way, like, does anybody remember Nicole Brown Simpson's name anymore? Everyone just, the OJ trial. Who'd he kill? I don't know, some fag and some bitch.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but.
I mean, Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson. And this, that tells you the difference in the time frame between 1980 and 1994. When Mark David Chapman did this, he was vilified as he should have been.
Right.
Whereas in the 90s, he would have been made a hero. Or he would have gotten
an anti-hero
fan mail
or
and all this shit. And
exactly.
You know, the only thing I say is, and this is on a purely snide, jokey level, that, I mean, Christ, you're going to kill John Lennon, but you don't even take a shot at Yoko? What the hell is the matter with you, man?
Yeah.
You know, you could have saved us from an extra two decades of
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like I said, I refuse to ever give her credit for having any talent whatsoever.
She doesn't. She
leached off of John. That's all that was. But I remember that. And then there was another a year later, not an assassination, but a famous assassination attempt.
Exactly.
Which was even had more bizarre things behind it.
Definitely. And we'll tell the story after we hear about the attempted
assassinee.
Right? I don't know. I haven't the faintest idea. The attempted target.
Okay.
I heard a noise and we came out of the hotel and headed for the limousine. And I heard some noise and I thought it was firecrackers. And the next thing I knew, one of the Secret Service agents behind me just seized me here by the waist and plunged me headfirst into the limo. I landed on the seat and the seat divider was down. And then he dived in on top of me, which is part of their procedure to make sure that I'm covered. But as it turned out later, the shot that got me caromed off the side of the limousine and hit me while I was diving into the car. And it hit me back here under the arm and then hit a rib. And that's what caused an extreme pain. And then it tumbled, it turned instead of edgewise and went tumbling down to within an inch of my heart. But when I got in
That was former President Ronald Reagan speaking about his 1981 assassination attempt.
Exactly, and I definitely remember that. There, of course, is the famous footage of they were watching him get in the car. You hear the shots ring out, and exactly,
Secret Service agents just explode out of nowhere all over the place.
Exactly, and toss him in the limo, and they take off. And of course, his attempted
his potential assassin.
Potential assassin. Of course, why was he?
He wanted Jodie Foster to recognize that he loved her, and he thought assassinating President Reagan would get Jodie Foster to notice him. I swear I'm not making that up.
No, I know you're not. And that was just a crazy go-nuts story, and I remember when that came out, and people were like, really?
Jodie Foster?
And then I always
you gotta remember, she was 16, 17 at the time. She was a kid, even.
She was over 18 at the time, but just, I think she was very young. And then I always laugh because, of course, years later, she came out of the closet as a lesbian, and I'm like, well, dude.
Wow.
Would have been in vain anyway.
Dude, I think you need to crush some tinfoil on your antennae because you're getting some mixed signals, dude.
Exactly. But again, that, and of course, the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan is why now when you see the president's limo, it weighs, 32 tons or however
it's
much.
It's armored.
Yeah, because it's armored, and there was a huge difference between 1963 and the assassination of JFK. And of course, he was riding in a convertible down the middle of Dallas versus the assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan, when the car obviously had a solid roof and was somewhat armored.
He was walking out of a building, so it was just some average, hey, the president got done signing some legislature,
exactly.
Here's TV news, and then blam, blam, blam.
To now, of course, there's the famous incident of the egging of George Bush.
And the shoe. Although the shoe was on foreign soil.
The shoe was on foreign soil. But here in the U.S. at least, the amount of security that goes into a presidential visit, and we've had a couple here in Green Bay.
Especially during before Obama got elected, McCain seemed to think Wisconsin was a key state. Him and Palin must have came here half a dozen times.
And then Obama himself has come here twice.
I'm not sure.
I think twice. But when the president visits now, you may as well not leave your house. You may as well just pack it up and, have your food in. And
one of the photogs told me that when they went to cover the Obama thing, this is after he was president, one of the times he was here, he said they were just shy of asking him to take his entire camera apart to prove that there wasn't a gun or parts hidden in it or something.
Exactly.
It's like, if I take this apart, I can't get it back together. I'm just a fucking photog from a local TV station. Relax, guys.
Yeah, and so that's one of the huge changes that we've seen is I think it goes back to kind of a societal change where even if you didn't like the president himself, the man that was in charge, because there were plenty of people that didn't like JFK, especially. And again, this is going back to that 60s mentality, but especially because he was Catholic. They were afraid that the Pope was going to be in charge of the United States.
Well, and the military-industrial complex hated him because he was actually trying to, what an idiot, get us out of Vietnam.
Exactly.
What a moron he was there.
And so there were plenty of people. But at the same time, if you ever met JFK as president, you respected the office of president. You respected what he did, the decisions he faced, the Bay of Pigs, that kind of an outcome, and you respected that. Nowadays, I don't think that respect is there as much anymore.
Well, in a weird way, it's because they have disrespected the office to the point. I mean, when you've got a sitting president claiming he's seen a UFO on national television, I think that's when you kind of go, yeah, we elected the wrong guy. Carter's not right for this.
Yeah, that was...
You've got Nixon. It's a little before our time, but you've got Nixon being caught lying and cheating and conniving and then kind of, not a whole lot you can do to me. I'll basically admit it, but, fuck y'all. And then the next president comes in and pardons him.
Yes.
And it's like, what the fuck? And then you've got... I know I harp on Bush a lot, George Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, but George Bush is one of the dumbest people, but George W. Bush,
right,
is one of the dumbest people I have ever seen held in public office. It is ridiculous, the stupidity of this man. And every time he opened his mouth, he embarrassed the office of the presidency.
And really, internationally, he was an
more of a joke.
He was an embarrassment to the U.S. And I remember traveling internationally during his presidency. Gosh, where'd I go? I don't remember exactly where I was, but I went and people would be like, "You're an American." yes, I am. And it was always well, I'm American, or yes, I'm American, but I didn't vote for George Bush. That's what you always followed up with, or you just sewed a Canadian flag onto your backpack, and that was that was that. It was,
you just said a lot.
Well, no, you don't even have to. You know, you that I love our Canadian brothers because they have saved me from a lot of embarrassment over time. Until somebody looks at me and goes, "You're Canadian, huh?" Yes. Name three Canadian prime ministers.
There was that guy, and then there was that other guy, and then there was the dude.
Yeah.
I'm an American. I'm so sorry.
Name me four cities in Newfoundland. Oh, God.
but I mean, literally, you know, and then you had Reagan making all his stupid gaffes, and then you had George Bush the first making all his moronic things and then puking on the Japanese ambassador, and you know, and then you had Clinton and the sex scandal. And the reason the presidential office holds no honor anymore is the people in it had no honor anymore.
And really, that was one of my hopes. That was one of my hopes with Obama, was to kind of restore that office. And he's done a lot
anger
to restore it.
Rising.
Yes, I know. and he certainly, compared to George W., he did a lot to restore respect to the office.
But most of his administration to this date has either been giving in or fixing Bush's.
Right.
All the damage Bush did. Right. He's been a cleanup president, is what
right.
I call him.
And it's a shame. I don't know if he's gonna. I haven't seen much rise out of the Democratic Party, but of course you don't do that with an incumbent. But my God, I don't know if he's gonna hold a second term, and I'm scared by that prospect.
I think he will, just because all the choices on the Republican side are just so laughably bad that even
point.
The Republicans aren't supporting the Republican nominees. You know,
exactly.
So the only one, I know this is going to go weird on you, the only one that has an actual shot of taking down Obama is the one that will never, ever, ever get the nomination, and that
Ron
is Huntsman.
Paul.
No, Huntsman.
Huntsman, really?
Huntsman's the only Republican that's currently running that even has a mild foot in reality. He's the only one that's actually a human being, and he'll never get the nomination, but he's the only one that has a chance of actually giving Obama a run for his money. Ron Paul, not really. He's still too wacky.
He is kind of out there.
Even the Republicans don't like Ron Paul.
Yeah, I know.
So, no, I think Obama's a shoo-in because he's got no competition.
He's got no competition. And really, when it comes to political parties, most of the time I agree with the Democrats. Most of the time, sometimes I agree with the Republicans. I really am. I'm one of the ones that the political parties love to talk to and love to call.
You're what's called an undecided voter.
I'm a swing voter. My official name is, I'm an independently registered swing voter, which means I refuse to associate myself with a given party.
I just want everyone to elect Ralph Wiggum. You know, I just want everyone.
We did.
Not the real life Ralph Wiggum. I want the Simpsons Ralph Wiggum elected.
We did. He was president prior to Obama.
Mission accomplished. Wait, we're going to stay in there another 7 years.
Exactly.
Shit.
But, you know, and that's another thing that we saw, of course, that I remember watching in high school was the beginning of the very first Gulf War.
Oh, well, not even that. The end of the Vietnam War. I mean, you and I were little children at the time, but we witnessed Vietnam end.
Yeah.
And those people come home. And that's another big sea change that we
exactly.
saw. Look at when the Nam vets came home to when the Gulf War and Iraq vets came home.
Yeah.
Nam vets were spit on. They couldn't get hired.
Yep.
There was no health care or mental care for them. It was fuck you, you baby-killing, village-burning sack of shit. And yep. then the Gulf War veterans are, you're a hero!
Yes. Yeah.
That's something else we witnessed, was somehow that change to how we look at veterans.
But that really was a sea change, because you had World War II and the Korean War, and World War II vets and the Korean War, of course, the World War II vets, it was a huge heroic time, end of the World War, VJ Day, VE Day, and it was parades, and everybody was happy as can be. Korean Wars, we were like, yeah, right on, good to go. And then, of course, the Vietnam vets, most of them were treated pretty badly. Of course, the difference is we lost that war. And people were looking for people to blame. And a lot of people, and the reason they were treated so badly was a lot of people looked to the soldiers and said, you're baby killers and you burned villages and stuff like that and you accomplished nothing and it's your fault. When it comes to the Gulf War, we've kind of swung back to them being heroes again, and
see, I'm gonna take a very controversial position right now. And
sure.
And you and I have not discussed this, so I do not know what your stance is going to be on this, Scott. But my position is, while I respect veterans, I don't think being a veteran should automatically make you better than a non-veteran. You see it all the time. Oh my God, you're a veteran. You can cut ahead of me in line. Oh my God, he's a veteran. Give him a break. I'm so sick of this. Oh my God, he was a veteran. He deserves special treatment. I mean, they have programs now. Like when you come back from the Iraq War, you know, if all of a sudden you can't pay your bills, there are special programs to help you pay your bills because you did your part for the country. Yet your people that are working 9 to 5 every day, busting their asses, can't get any help with their bills. It pisses me off that just automatically serving makes you some sort of a hero. This is not Starship Troopers.
I see that, and I see your point. I've also known, and for me, the difference is, a veteran that went into the Army and became a pencil pusher in Virginia and then got out, that's one kind of veteran versus combat veteran. And I've known way too many combat veterans, and I have immense respect for them. And I'm one of the people that, oh, you're a combat veteran? Please, cut in line.
Well, and see, part of my ideal might be the fact that I had numerous uncles and older cousins that were in Nam and came back and were shit on. And then I see all the accolades going to all these young guys. Maybe that's because I didn't personally, you know, live through that, I lived through watching my relatives get shit on.
And I can see your point. I really can see your point. I know exactly where you're coming from. But, you know, I'm of the opinion that I can't do anything about what happened to your uncles. I can't do anything about what happened to Vietnam vets, because even though we lost that war, even though that was a giant political shithole of hell, I still would be one to respect the veterans when they came back.
See, like I said, respect, but I'm just saying your average Joe off the street seems to elevate them. And that's the part that bugs me.
You should. And until you've lived or dealt with what these combat veterans have dealt with, and maybe I should introduce you to my friend Jacob, who was an Iraq combat veteran. And
guy we used to work with, remember Luke?
Yeah, and Luke was fucking nuts, though. But until you've dealt with the shit that they've dealt with, I don't think you have the right to shit on them. I elevate them because I've been to the Middle East. I know exactly what they've been through. I know.
I'm not advocating shitting on them.
I know.
I'm just saying don't automatically elevate them. I've known a lot of like Iraq War veterans that are great guys. I also know ones that are absolute douchebags. I'm a veteran. You can't do nothing to me.
I agree. They're out there, and those are the guys where usually other veterans will fucking slap them down.
I've never seen it, but I hope that happens.
I have. Okay. I have. But what I'm saying is I've heard the stories. I've been to the Middle East. I know the region. I know what kind of hell is over there. And so I elevate them not automatically just because they're veterans, but because I know what they've been through.
Well, I'm just looking forward to the hate mail I get from this, from veterans and veterans associations.
And I'm looking forward to the hate mail I get from people that are on your side. I mean, it's going to happen.
Lost in the Static Show at gmail.com.
And what are some of the things that you guys have lived through that were world-changing moments, the birth of the internet?
I would really like to hear from some of our German listeners or European listeners about like what the wall falling meant to them.
Exactly.
Actually being...
I've been talking to one. I'm trying to get him to do an interview with us. He's a little reluctant, but he grew up in the DDR, the Deutsche Demokratische Republik, which is East Germany. So... We're out of time, Josh, but thanks a lot for joining us this week.
Next week will hopefully be a little less somber.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have a little bit more fun. Goodbye, everybody.
We haven't figured out what next week is yet.
We'll get there.